The Guy at the Movies podcast is now Smash Cuts. We're happy to be back, excited to dive into this first episode and this new endeavor. Sean, let's hit it. Didn't mean for that to keep going.
Oh, I thought there was another verse.
Another verse, same as the first. Clearly we are retooling, and this is the first launch of Smash Cuts today. We're so happy to be back. Sean, happy to see you back on my screen, buddy. How's it going?
Oh, it's good to be back. It's good to start talking movies. We have both had quite insanely demanding schedules at the worst of times. And so it's good to just be able to sit back and talk movies again.
Yeah, absolutely. Has been very demanding, very, very tiring couple of months to start 2024. But wow, we are starting episode 173 with a refresh here. The same movie content that you've come to love. But we will be organizing a little bit differently and, debuting Smash Cuts today. So we're happy for you all to be along for the ride. Why don't we dive right in here, Sean? And we have to talk about the biggest movie of the year so far, which may end up being one of the biggest movies of the year when all is said and done. Dune Part 2. I know that we both saw it. We both have some pretty glowing remarks about it, but why don't you start off by telling me your thoughts?
I mean, yeah, you know, I would love to, I'd love to like be like off the beaten path or have some sort of fresh take, but, no, I absolutely loved this movie. I loved it a lot. And, I think that, it hits the energy better than the first one. I love the first one as well. So there's nothing to besmirch the first one at all. I absolutely loved the visuals of this. I usually do a top 10 shots of, 2024. It's going to be difficult not to make all top 10 from Dune Part 2. It's kind of insane, but it just shows that this guy knows how to like make a sweeping blockbuster, like, but also be artsy about it through who he casts to the actual visual cues that he makes with this. It's stupendous. It's really just like something that, you know, I was worried when it was coming out with like 100% reviews everywhere. I said, oh boy, I don't like looking this high up on something. And then no, it delivers.
Yeah, completely there with you. You know, I think the acting is something that we can't ignore here. And one of the funny sayings that's going around online is that the best actor in Dune is whoever's on the screen at that time.
Yeah.
And that's 1000% true, from Timothy Chalamet to Rebecca Ferguson to Zendaya. But a special, and Austin Butler, of course, I think killed it as Fade Ra. But Javier Bardem was the quiet star of this movie for me. Of course, there's a lot of fun that he had with his character, who is always kind of like, you know.
He's quite literally turned into a meme at this point.
Like, he has.
In the best way possible.
Because Paul, like, you know, sharts his pants or something, and he's like, oh, Messiah. but he just delivered in every scene that he was a part of and was a nice through line. I think from beginning to end here to kind of show the importance of Paul's rise. It is fascinating hearing from people that aren't familiar with the original book and the arc that Paul has, realizing at the end of this that like, whoa, what's up with this dude?
I mean, you got to know absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. I mean, I think we've seen this before in one of the most famous franchises ever. So, you know, I wasn't feeling great about him, like, you know, at any times really. So, but, I don't know. I think like it's just this weird situation where, you know, you're utilizing a fundamentalist a religion to, you know, like be able to take over an entire community. And I can't relate at all to that politics at all happening around here. But yikes. And it that was like some of the most interesting stuff is that, yes, this fundamentalist religion is ruining something. And I'm watching, I'm going to probably mention it later, but I'm watching Shogun, which has like a very like higher truth to that. And there's something there as well with that sort of colonization. I mean, the acting was sensational. When I think about Javier Bardem, when you look at these as two separate movies, in this one, you find out he's funny. And like, But I saw it with Sam, and she was like, why are you laughing? Because there's a moment where, like, he's talking about the big centipedes and the little centipedes. Big centipedes are okay. Little centipedes, they're not okay. And I think it's, like, she didn't find it as funny. I think it's just his delivery with just, like, the actual, like, set piece of him about to go into the desert alone knowing he'll probably die. Like, all of that just really did, like, make, like, a good light of it. But these scenes have a good way of, the effects are obviously great. They're obviously using, like, forms of CGI, which, you know, is a curse word these days, but shouldn't be if it's used properly. And this uses it properly because there's a well-deserved amount of grit in there. When he rides the sandstorm, you know, like, obviously, that's fake. And it's not all completely.
What?
Just not. And so, but that mix where you get, like, a really gritty scene is just some of the most important stuff and why you can be just transfixed the entire time to this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's so funny that a lot of the scenes that are memorable to me, like, I think the Austin Butler and Timothy Chalamet fight was memorable because it was very well choreographed and really interesting. Could have gone on a lot longer, in my opinion. But I was really fascinated by it. But every scene with the sandworms in this was just kind of all inspiring, if you will. Like, it was wild. From the three giant sandworms kind of coming out of the sandstorm to even just the riding of the sandworms, not only with Paul, tackling, like, the mother of all sandworms. But then also when they're riding the sandworms to the south, like, that was just such.
They're just using them as commuters.
Yeah.
It's kind of unbelievable.
It's a subway. It's the Dune subway. The Arrakis subway.
I really think about the characters in this movie, and there's obviously, this is this complex novel. I bet if I ever read the novel, I know I won't, but because I'm illiterate, but if I ever read the novel, I'm sure, like, there's just so much more complexities in there. And I've heard from people that, like, they yada yada a lot, which is a good thing to do. A book is a book and a movie is a movie. Yeah. If you try to, like, explain, like, well, they started this electrical sandstorm to cause the sandworms to come by in order to try to defeat the emperor, it's like, that stuff is just going to get really muddy really fast. And so it just won't work. To respectfully put it this way, they sort of dumb it down, and you need to with a movie like this. You need to with these kind of ideas happening. And, you know, then someone like Sam, who saw Dune Part One the weekend it came out on Max, has not even, like, glanced at a Dune thing since. And, you know, like, she was literally like, Rebecca Ferguson shows up, so that's his mom. I knew what I was dealing with at that point. And so, but then by the, like, she loved the movie. Like, she really walked out of there loving the movie. I mean, she probably didn't grasp every single, like, aspect.
Sure.
But the attention to the characters, I think about this one scene where he has his trial where he goes out to the desert. And I know how that movie usually goes. That movie usually goes, a worm almost gets him, or some sort of beast almost gets him. And that's when Zendaya will save him. And in this case, Zendaya just kind of follows him and is like, no, yeah, you're certainly going to die. You're walking like an idiot. Sandworms aren't even here. So I'm just going to go with you now anyway. And I love that that's how they handle that, instead of, like, a little bit of extra cheap action. The movie's not short on action at all. It's
not at all. But
it's a 2.5 hour, like, you're gone from the shittiness of this world and you are brought into something, like, that's just absolutely bonkers and engaging and enlightening, and you will just completely lose yourself in it.
Absolutely. It's also very technically sound. And we can talk about that in a second when we're talking about Oscar talk already. But I want to give my two criticisms of the film, and they're very minor criticisms, but it's two story points that I thought were handled a little too quick. One is and spoilers, obviously, for those of you who for some reason haven't seen it by now, the theater was packed yesterday, and I assume that was Dune Part 2 as well as Kung Fu Panda 4 for the families.
Two different avenues, but yes, definitely.
It was my, I mean, they definitely weren't there for Imaginary because there was like 10 of us in that theater, but the first is the reveal that Paul is a descendant of the Baron.
Yeah.
And that kind of comes and goes. Part of me is happy that it wasn't dwelled on that much, but it does seem like a very big story point that they probably should have focused on a little bit more. And I imagine we'll learn more about that in, you know, the Dune Part 3, Dune Messiah, however you want to refer to it. that frustrated me a little bit because it was kind of like a blink, not a blink and you miss it type thing, but it just happened pretty quickly. The other was the end of the fight between Paul and Fedra, where it's a very close camera angle. And, you know, Paul does his patented move of dropping the blade and stabbing Fedra. And you don't really see it, honestly. They went for a reveal instead.
Like, they went for the dramatic reveal.
Yeah, and it took me a couple minutes to be like, oh, that's a callback. And like, oh, that's cool. But it just felt like it robbed that moment of the, not the importance, because it obviously is a very important moment. But they could have driven that home a little bit more.
Yeah. So they focused on suspense more than establishment, because I was freaking out at that moment. And, like, and so that moment worked for me because I was like, hey, wait, who stabbed who? Is he done? Is he dead? And then, you know, it backs up and I was like, oh, nice. So, yes. I think, yeah, like between those, these revelations, and this is the stuff where, you know, the third act or even the second half of this movie really yada yada is a lot of the stuff. And I like really does. And it's almost like, you know, there will be people that are fans of the book that'll be like, what the hell? You know, this is very important things. And it's like, yes, but then you have a 4-hour part two of a movie that like really gets into the mechanics of each and every level of this. And you lose that pace, which was blisteringly fast. Like I talk about runtimes all the time, and I think it's just a boring narrative of me talking about runtimes now. But this was one where 2.5 hours, I mean, flew. Never checked a watch, like had to go to the bathroom, didn't mind, did not leave the seat, was able to hold it. Like all of this was great, and I was blown away.
What do you make of these Star Wars Dune comparisons?
Well, by the way, they can get very violent because, you know, they're like when it comes down to it, because essentially Lucas stole from Dune, like the ideas of it and everything. Dune came out first. I mean, Lucas also stole from Japanese warrior movies, and I'm grateful for him for that because that's what makes this film great. He stole from Joe Campbell. He stole, like, you know, like good filmmakers steal. And it's interesting to put these two together. I think that, you know, Star Wars has more, they focus more on further off planets and, you know, possibly like, you know, yeah, the families are around the same. It's an interesting, like, the nobilities and the levels are there. They still feel very, very different to me.
Let me give you some of the comparisons, because it is kind of eye-opening and interesting. The Jedi and the Freeman. Mm-hmm. Luke and Paul. This one I'm not really sure. The Krayt Dragons and Sandworms. Well, I guess, I would say the, what's it called? What's the thing that Boba Fett eats? No, that eats Boba Fett.
Oh, whoa, the Sarlacc pit.
Sarlacc. Yeah. I mean, that's a sandworm. Hello. Skywalkers and House Atreides.
Yep.
Tatooine and Arrakis, sandy planets. Mahdi and the Chosen One. Leia and Arulin. Emperor Shaddam IV and Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah.
So Christopher Walken and Palpatine. I don't think Walken's going to be popping up in like 17 more movies. Hyperspace and space folding. Anakin and Paul. So much here. The Force and the Spice. And then there was, what was the other one that I had seen? Oh, it was the Spice Mobiles, so to speak. Oh. You know what I mean? Like
the big Wallies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So there is a lot there, and it's interesting because I guess where I struggle with these comparisons is all great art is informed by what's come before. Mm-hmm. But there's never been a call or a reference to Dune having inspired George Lucas with this. It's kind of, you know, built as its own original piece, and that's not accurate. And that's what bothers me about it.
Well, I think the problem is that, you know, in Star Wars, in the credits, it doesn't say, like, you know, based on the movie. And I think it's because of that time, and also proven by David Lynch, Dune was considered quite unfilmable. And it's because you have to take gigantic liberties. And just like, you know, Lord of the Rings was unfilmable forever. It's because you have to like take out gigantic portions of it and you have to take some liberties. And so I look at something like that and I think, you know, space politics is fascinating. And I think that Dune does space politics better. Andor does space politics better than anything in, you know, the Star Wars movies. And so, like, I go to the Florence Pugh character, who is very much off to the side for this whole thing, but is a cool and calculating politician. Mm-hmm. And I kind of loved that character for her. And I think
she's more great
of her. I mean, Christopher Walken was a stunt casting that felt more like a distraction. but, you know, it was still cool. Like, just have, like, you know, just have the weirdos and the freaks get in on this. And, you know, we'll just, like, cast that. And it works. I don't know what 3 is going to look like. I've heard that the third book is not as great. I don't know this off the, like, from my own experience, so I can't speak to that. But I've heard third book not as great. Takes place 10 years later. So, you know, I think he's going to take his time with this one. And that means no cool movies in between. He's going to James Cameron everything. But,
and we should mention that, you know, there is a lot of talk. I think the legendary CEO recently said that they're in discussions about Dune Part 3 is how he referred to it. The book is Dune Messiah, that's likely to be what we see down the road. It sounds like Hans Zimmer is already on board for writing music. Villeneuve has said that they're working on the script and just trying to get it right, but this won't be his next one. There's a couple more projects that are
okay. That makes me feel better. That makes me feel really better, because otherwise, you turn into a Cameron where it's like, Cameron, give me like a cool action movie in between your two Avatars. I know you love Avatar, and I think that's great and all, but like, give me just like, you know, throw in a True Lies in the middle of your 12-hour making of a movie.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the list as we speak, and I apologize for not having it, but there's a couple movies that he's attached to, and there's also a secret movie that's out there that has people like, you know, really, really theorizing there. But yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a little while before he gets back into the Dune world, which I think is quite all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, they set this up for the opening. I mean, just like in the first one where there was like the setup for more, but you do still feel like you have a complete movie. This one even more so. I would love to see how these characters keep going. I think that please call it Dune Part 3. I think calling it Dune Messiah is a huge marketing mistake. People are going to be like, is this like a part of the same story? Is this like that? People are just not going to get it. Agreed. We can't understand it. So it's like at this point, just you definitely just got to call it Part 3.
In an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, this was a little while ago, he had said, I just finished Part 2 very, very recently and went from Part 1 to Part 2 without even an hour in between. I'm not complaining. I feel blessed to work, of course, but it's just that I physically need to recover for a couple of weeks. It's also about making sure that I have the right screenplay. I have 4 projects on the table currently. One of them is a secret project that I cannot talk about right now, but that needs to see the light of day quickly, which is interesting. So it would be a good idea to do something in between projects before tackling Dune Messiah and Cleopatra. All these projects are still being written, so we'll see where they go.
I forgot he's doing Cleopatra. Jesus. I did too. I mean, I'm excited because it's him, but that doesn't sound like that's
going to be. Wasn't what's her name from Wonder Woman attached to that?
No, I don't think it was that one. I think they were making 2 Cleopatras.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Of course. Why not?
This will go great.
Yeah, that has always worked well. All right. Well, for full disclosure, we are recording on the day of the Oscars, and this episode is coming out after the Oscars. But Sean, let's already look to 2025 here. What do you see for Dune at the Oscars next year?
I go back and forth, unfortunately, because sequels are not kind to the Oscars. Like, you know, I think of, especially with a Part 3 that's going to be promised or is like pretty close to being promised. I think of the most common occurrences, Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers got the least amount of nominations. It's the only time Peter Jackson didn't get a Best Director nomination. It was completely passed over, knowing that Part 3 was going to get its flowers. This feels a little different, only because the technicals are great. It dominated in the technicals before. I can't see it not dominating in the technicals again, especially with a writer's strike. there will be enough movies that will be nominated for Oscars this year, but it will be a lighter load than usual. Stuff got canned, stuff got canceled, stuff's going to move further back. So right now it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a desert. And so as long as they walk that sandworm walk, maybe they could get through with a couple of nominations. My one think here is that, you know, yes, sure, sequels don't do as well, but Denis Villeneuve did not get nominated for Best Director. And that was kind of this stunning, absolutely ridiculous moment from all the possible snubs. And so I think he'll get a Best Director makeup for this. It seems weird that he didn't get it. And it's not that the guy never got a Best Director nomination ever. He got one for Arrival. So he should feel good. But, you know, I do think this might, I worry, the sequel part worries me, but everything else about it does not worry me. I mean, you know, coming out in March, that is early, but it's not terribly early. I mean, no. Amazing Spider-Man might win tonight. And that came out like right around March as well. And Boy and the Heron almost took it out, but they just like they were able to keep momentum. Everything Ever All at Once came out in April. Oppenheimer came out in July. The December release to win an Oscar doesn't really have the weight it used to have.
No, it actually hurts, I think. I mean, it when you think Iron about Claw, yeah. Iron Claw, and even I would say All of Us Strangers as well was kind of a muddled rollout too. You know, they're both movies that people are talking about the acting performances in, which did not get any love because the categories were pretty much solidified months ago.
And then the other part of this is they could say, hey, we gave a lot of love to Dune. It won 6 Oscars. You know, they were all technicals. But so like, why bother like giving it to Dune 2? It feels sort of undeniable. We're getting the reaction that we got when what was it? The Across the Spider-Verse got where it's just like the letterbox was like an average of 5. Like the IMDb, it hit the top of it immediately. These are dumb things because those are internet things and the internet's stupid. The internet's correct in this case, but the internet's stupid. And so, like, you know, the Academy and the internet don't exactly get along, but there is something there where that popularity keeps rising. I'm going to be writing an article about this after everything for the dust settles of this season. I don't know where I'm going to come in on because it's going to be it's a little bit trickier than like I know everyone wants to say all the Oscars and I'm like righto guys I love the idea but it's going to be sequels are tricky.
Yeah, it is interesting your reference to the Two Towers and this being the second of likely 3 movies where because a lot of the comparisons that this is getting is to Return of the King.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascinating, but yeah. I see what you mean in terms of the, you know, the actual movie itself being the second of 3 and drawing comparisons in that way. We shall see. We shall see. I want to see this again, actually. I've been thinking about this and I don't do that often, but this is a movie I really want to go back to the theater and see. Seeing it in IMAX was an experience.
Very glad I was able to see it in IMAX. That meant I had to venture out of my AMC bubble. And because of that, I didn't get the Dune popcorn bucket. And I also actually had to pay for a movie, which, you know, instead of pay the $20 that I usually pay every month. So I was a little bit perturbed the whole time. But other than that, worth the IMAX. I mean, the sound just absolutely blows up in your chest and then like just amazing stuff. But, you know, yeah, this is going to still dominate those technicals. I mean, like it's got visual effects. It's got sound. It just does. Like there's nothing fighting him there. Cinematography, it's going to the same guy. Could it go? I mean, Hans Zimmer, it's a similar score, but he's doing more stuff with it. So there's an original score nomination there for him, like especially like I thought about that last song while in the car, like just for a while that last song was with me. Not since La La Land did that happen, so that's gonna be something there where it's like okay, there's it's gonna do well, it's gonna get quite a few nominations. I'll be very curious to see how good it does.
In agreement. Well, not only is that a big movie that's in theaters right now, but we're also seeing a lot of quality in what's on television and the streaming series, especially. Let's talk about the end of the Emmys year and Masters of the Air, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Shogun. Why don't you lead us off there?
Well, this gets like this is always a strange part of the year because the Emmys year ends in May. Or the end of May almost. I have to look it up. It's either the end of May or the end of June. And it's such a strange situation because like things you think are like nominated, you're wondering which is nominated. Then it got weirder this season when they put the Emmys back 6 months because of the writer's strike. Therefore, like, The Bear was winning a lot of Emmys. All of those Emmys that they won were for season one.
Yeah.
But you better believe that Eben Moss Bacharach got that Emmy because of the work he did in season two. Like, because season two was out there and he was really good in it. He was also good in season one. I don't want to like besmirch his performance, but people couldn't get that out of their heads, and they definitely voted for him and got the Emmy. So now what happens with season two of The Bear? Season three of The Bear is once again going to come out in June again, just to piss everybody off, like when it comes to the So it's been a little bit crazy. I will say, though, usually around this time is an absolute hell time where there's 5,000 shows out that are all Emmy contenders. Most of them don't even get into because they do kind of suck. But like, I'm thinking about like White House Plumbers, Love and Death. Like last year, it was just so many and none of them worked. Like none of them got in there. This year is interesting with Masters of the Air, which is a basically the quote unquote spiritual sequel to Band of Brothers and the Pacific. It's not over yet. I think it's got one or two more episodes. It's been a lot more interesting than the others. It follows a little bit. It follows down a few more paths. Like, you know, last couple of episodes, they haven't been in the air, which is interesting. They've been in prison camps, and it's like, well, that's actually the horrors of war. So there's a part of that that actually looks great. And they went from, they switched directors from Cary Fukunaga to Ryan Bowden and Anna Fleck, who famously did that like really great war movie, Captain Marvel. And so I think that this will be a very like, but also what they're doing in this is great. And so the tone did shift. It's interesting. It's got Austin Butler in it, and he's just like, it's kind of just unfairly attractive. Like, just get out. Like, he's just a literal incarnation of James Dean. He's just amazing. So he's just so cool. But I do think this will be an interesting one because this is the first one that's not on HBO. The other two, like, obviously got showered with a billion technical Emmys and, you know, the occasional Upward Emmy. But I don't know what holds in this one. I don't know, like, how the people have been reacting. Then you got something like Shogun, which, like, is coming in on FX. And you maybe you haven't seen Shogun, but you have seen 12 advertisements for Shogun. If you watch a basketball game, I think they had a samurai take a free throw out there because they are so desperate to consistently advertise Shogun. And for good reason, they spent all of the money that ever is been in the world on this show. And you know what? It shows in a good way. It's the production design is stellar. It's being cheaply compared to Game of Thrones in samurai times. And
interesting.
It's kind of that. There's a little bit more to it. I don't want it to just be considered that, but it is really good and really outstanding where they're in the world here. Like the characters and this culture that they're going through. And, you know, there's one man, it is just like, you know, their leader dies. And so five men could possibly step up to be the leader. And, you know, it's a fascinating, dramatic work. Also, like, you know, there's the fun part where, like, just like the ice monsters, Christianity's coming in, and there's like some samurai that are Christians, and it's really interesting to look at all that. And it's a cool show so far. And then, like, you know, in the comedy categories, once again, the comedy could just go to like The Bear season two. It's gonna be the weirdest. People aren't ready for what's going to be going on. It's just like, because they're like, wait, didn't The Bear just win a bunch? I'm like, yeah, no, this is season two of The Bear. No, didn't season two of The Bear just win a bunch? No, that was because the prolonged, like, I can't keep doing this. But also Mr. and Mrs. Smith, where Donald Glover, very, very popular there. Another great show. So what I like about the end of this season of the Emmys is we're getting great shows and we're not getting the overabundance. Now, the reason we're not getting the overabundance is because, unfortunately, it's the writer's strike. And that's actually a sad reason why that's happening in a way, because a lot of stuff got pushed, a lot of stuff got delayed. But usually right now, it's just like the worst because I'm just watching 8-9 different shows and they're all like very mediocre. And so now I'm watching some pretty good shows.
Right, that, like, consistently good.
Yeah, that are just really, really unbelievably good. And so I'm happy that at least that's happening. So there's that.
Well, listen, it's kind of wild thinking about that the I didn't even think about how the quality of the shows that we're seeing right now is directly related to the writer's strike, and that, like, they're pushing the biggest shows right now that they have, because there isn't an abundance of shows to be screened right now. That pipeline has been extended because of the writer's strike, and it's going to be quite some time before we see that filled up again. I think that definitely makes it an interesting Emmys year, though, where you have such quality. You know, what's that going to look like?
Well, then eventually it's going to snap, where there's just going to be this revolution of drama versus comedy. And it's so difficult because everyone was so angry about The Bear being in comedy. I'm sort of like, I don't know, man. The Bear made me laugh a lot, even in those darkest moments. Yes. There was a lot of laughter I got. So I do sort of consider it a comedy. I understand the people that want to call it a drama. I think it has that comedic tone to it. You get something like Succession, which is really, really, really fucking funny. And so I start to think, I'm like, well, should Succession be a comedy? Because it's like, it's extremely funny. No, it has it's doing the drama thing. It's doing the drama tones. Barry is the one where people are just like, well, that can't possibly be a comedy. It's like, no, it's a comedy, but it is just a pitch black comedy. it is daunting. So I think there's a bigger problem than a show being put in as comedy or a show being put in as drama. And it's that line is getting harder and harder to decipher.
Yep.
And that's where things are going to get really, really tricky. Because I don't think they'll ever get rid of those categories like that. That's like, oh yeah, you're going to give away half the categories, but something really does have to give there. I don't know what it would be, but the comedy drama situation is going to be an interesting one coming through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're like in your element with all of this awards talk today. I love it.
It's been a while, and I've said all of these points on my way home, driving home. So I'm finally able to let them fly into a podcast.
Have a place to channel them here. All right, let's talk, Sean. I don't know that we've really talked much about this, and it has been a little while since we've been on the pod, but we are in a time where there's a lot of cancellations of projects happening, and this all started really with Warner Brothers Discovery. Of course, Batgirl and the Scooby-Doo animated film were the first two casualties that really, I think, gained some mainstream attention. Batgirl was finished filming, but was kind of being put together and was in post-production. I believe Scooby-Doo was already done and was like ready to roll. And then we, of course, have Coyote versus Acme, which is a done can film that's getting really good, doing really well in test screenings, and was shopped by WB, but WB is not getting the return that they're looking for on it. So it looks like Coyote versus Acme is also going to be shelved. We also have recent news from Bob Iger in one of the earnings calls talking about Disney quietly canceling part of their slate. And I want to theorize what that might be, what some of those films are that were quietly canceled. But I also want to draw the distinction here between canceling films that are done or in post-production and then quietly canceling things that have been announced or things that have started moving towards being filmed and stuff like that. There's a little bit of a difference there. And so the latter with Disney, that stuff happens all the time. What the biggest concern here for me, and I think a lot of people that are following this news, especially with WB, is it's that there's, what does this do to the trust between creatives and WB, Warner Brothers in particular, Warner Brothers Discovery now, for the future? Given that this is one of the more storied studios, it looks like they're definitely taking a weird path here in trying to financially revitalize themselves, potentially for a sale down the road, but hurting some of the creatives along the way, not only the people that are on screen or directing, but also the others that are just making a day-to-day living by producing or lights or camera work or any of that. What's your take on all this?
It's rough because there is the streaming service Max and Disney Plus and all the streaming services, really, even the ones that are doing, or oh, I don't want to say doing well, but even the ones that like those leaders are going to be fine on their yachts and all that good stuff. I don't know. I didn't have enough insults booked, but they'll be fine. But the streaming bubble is like, if it hasn't popped, it's like popping now.
Yeah.
And so financially, it can't sustain itself where they are. So that alone tells me that, like, I see, like, when a film gets canceled or I see when, like, a show gets taken off a streaming service, it's like, well, I get it from a financial standpoint, but it morally is fucked. Like, because now there's, like, there are just streaming services that just don't, or streaming shows that just straight up do not exist anymore. I mean, hey, listen, I saw the Willow Disney Plus. I did not think it was good at all. But it does bother me that something got created and now can never be seen, even if it's not good. That there's a weird thing there where it just, like, absolutely can't be seen anymore.
Right.
And that just feels scary to me. So I don't know how it works. I don't draw up many contracts or deal with many contracts, but I think they'll have to have some sort of thing where it's like, we'll keep this on the streaming service for 5 years or 10 years or something. Because, like, some of these go in a year or two, and it's kind of scary. And
I mean, Willow was so fast. You bring that one up, I feel like it, like, finished and then they're like, you're out.
I mean, I was lucky that I was able to finish last few episodes, like, because they really did take it down. Max did this with a bunch of its movies. Like, I remember, like, American Pickle, and it's like, was American Pickle a movie that I was going to revisit or put on any of my top 100 lists? No, but I don't know, man. A movie was created and then just, like, can't be seen at all. Yeah, ever. It's like disappeared from the entire world. And I know that what I'm seeing now, obviously you see it on Netflix a lot, where just a lot of HBO shows are there. Some of them, like, just got, like, taken to there, and, like, Netflix made the second season of The Tourist that started on HBO. I'm just trying to, like, you know, like, why wouldn't you sell this? Like, we talked about the Coyote vs. Acme, where, like, the outcry was just sell it somewhere. And, you know, I mean, they did a horrible job selling it, basically with the intention of no one's going to buy it for this price. And so that was just, like, an absolute lame moment and just in complete shame, because this movie does sound very good. And, you know, now, and you know what? They, like, Will Forte, who said, like, you know, I'm really upset, this sounds good. He could say whatever he wants now. He could say, whew, this actually was quite the piece of shit. I'm very glad that, like, actually, that was Will Forte's reaction. I love that when he said it got canceled. He's like, oh man, I guess it was really bad. Like, he genuinely was like, he was fine with it. He's like, oh, this crappy movie won't come out. Then when he saw it, he's like, no, this is good.
Yeah.
And so I think there's something wrong with, there's this bottom line, and I won't be as flaky as I possibly can. We're making movies as a business. I get it. You know, you get, but it's just,
but it always has been.
It always has been. And there's a morality here, or not even morality, a responsibility to, if something is created, if something is well-liked, you should try to get it out there. If something has been made, I feel like no matter what, no matter bad or good, I think that has to be out there. I mean, fuck off, the movie's too bad to be put into theaters, because I sat through Madam Web. Like, and, you know, I know that Pepsi paid for, like, all of the movie, but
Yeah, I'm with you there. It is really fascinating. And, like, I mentioned kind of jokingly, it's the industry has always been, you know, founded in business, right? And it's a matter of balancing what your output is with the financial returns. And I don't know. For some of this, it seems like you would probably do, like, Coyote versus Acme, released at the right time, is going to make good money because it's family fare. It's a recognized IP. And I think they were trying to sell it for $80 million or something. You're going to make more than $80 million. I don't know what the costs were to make it. Maybe that's part of the calculation. But is it really worth, shelving a movie like this so it never sees the light of day and pissing off the director, the stars, and all of that? It's just, I don't know how anyone then goes in and negotiates a project with Warner Brothers Discovery moving forward with any sense of trust and expectation that they're going to be able to, you know, bring their project to see the light of day. It's just really fascinating to me. Oh, Sean, this industry is going to beat us up. All right.
New good thing we're nowhere near it. Good Our thing. Podcast will remain online.
Sean, introducing a new segment this week that we're going to do with a co-host every week. And this is what I like to call, it's going to be really original, Smash Cuts, where Smash I'm going to give you a little bits of news, and I want you to go ahead and react to them. Give me a short reaction. Are you ready to roll?
Let's do it.
All right.
Smash Cuts.
All right. Here we go. First bit of news. Lindsay Lohan has confirmed that a Freaky Friday sequel is happening. Thoughts?
I don't like any kind of, like, you know, generational sequels, like, you know, except for Top Gun Maverick or Mad Max Fury Road. I think that most of the time we're in this age where so many of them are happening and they're looking to do nostalgia. I don't have faith in this. Just see the original.
Jimmy Furiosa doesn't look like something you want to see, because I have zero interest in it.
Furiosa is kind of doing like the, you know, that's like the prequel to the legacy sequel kind of deal. But so I don't know where that's going. But if this is going to be a fun little smash cuts. Now I'll just deviate to being like, why is it Charlize Theron in that movie? Like, with all respect to Anya Taylor-Joy. God bless her. She's amazing. I love her. But like literally Charlize Theron was kicking ass as Furiosa, and then you have Anya Taylor-Joy instead. I know it's a prequel, so she's supposed to be younger, but that's silly to me.
All right, next one. There was a viral Willy Wonka experience disaster that happened overseas, and now a horror movie is in the works based on this experience. Thoughts?
This is very similar to they wanted to make the comedy movie out of the Rudy Giuliani going to, a Best Western Green. Turns out it was a landscaping company. Yes. And it's like, I don't think you could make much out of that small of a situation. It was the funniest damn thing in politics in 2020 when Rudy Giuliani, what was the actual hotel he wanted? I can't even remember, but
It was a Four Seasons.
He wanted Four Seasons. He ended up in a Four Seasons landscaping. And there's a part of me that says, well, that could be a very funny movie, but that is the one joke of it. And so I'm worried that this is the one joke of this situation. And it did look kind of terrifying, that whole place and that whole situation. It's going to be interesting.
Moving on, Disney has announced that a surprise sequel to Moana is coming to theaters this November. This is stemming from a Disney Plus series of Moana that was in the works, and apparently they're just really happy with it and decided that it should be bigger and it should be a sequel. Your thoughts?
Well, I don't love the fact that it's coming from a series. That does worry
me. Weirds me out a little bit.
It's like there's a little bit of an ick there, but everything else about this, yes. Moana is a hot take of mine, and I know because there's millions of animated Disney movies, Moana might be one of my favorite Disney animated movies, like kind of low-key one of the best. It'll be like, you know, probably the one my kid watches first, and just, you know, we'll be watching it a million times, and I'm okay with that. I watched it a million times with my nieces. I think it's better than Frozen, and I know people fight me on that one. It's so good, because the Frozen Moana battle. I love Moana so much. So with loving it that much, boy, does this sequel scare me. I hope they can pull this off. I wonder if Musker and Clements are behind it, because they were behind the first one. And they're like ultimate warrior, like Disney animated people. Yeah. So if they're anywhere near this, then I'll be happy.
Moana. Say hey, whatever. All right. The final one is that Sony is said to be moving forward with a Madam Web sequel, regardless of the poor outpouring of vitriol that it received. Is this something that you support?
I mean, it did. The entire movie was a setup to how all the characters will eventually operate. So this was like, all of it was an origin story where, you know, it ended with them kind of, they're going to soon find their powers, the Foxy Force 5. And like, so I was just like, all right, well, I mean, this was all like the first act of this movie. And then, like, we're going to now maybe see this happen. But I think maybe these characters deserve a better chance, because I have heard from, like, after I watched the movie, a lot of comic book fans said these comic books are really good. And so I'm a little bit here saying, okay, well, if the comic books are really good, let's see what happens. I feel so terrible about that movie. I mean, you know, there's a couple of posts. The director directed some of the best episodes of season 4 of Succession, which now I'm like, okay, so this was the fault of like someone up there just like throwing firebombs on set. Like there's something that just everything went to hell.
Pepsi cans.
So many Pepsi cans.
That also is a fake story. The sequel's not happening.
Oh, look at me. I had a very measured, nice reaction.
You did. It's impressive.
You know what? I think I'm growing.
We snuck in a little Madam Web coverage there. Look at that. Look at that. Look at us. Look at us. All right. Before we wrap it up, Sean, I'm happy to be back. Fun to do this podcast. We should share with everyone that you're going to be on the pod every other week. So every 2 weeks you'll be here, and in between we'll have co-hosts filling in for you. Next week, Austin Burke will be the co-host. He'll be on the pod. And if you enjoy what you are watching or listening to, please like this episode wherever you are listening or watching. Be sure to subscribe and share with your friends. You can follow Smash Cuts Podcast on Instagram and Smash Cuts Pod on X or Twitter. I still call it Twitter, to keep up with the happenings, as well as to see who is up and coming in terms of co-hosts in the future. Also, we started a Patreon because it's not just a movement, it's a movie movement. So we're excited to create an exclusive community of film enthusiasts where opinions can be shared and cherished, even when we disagree. If you join the $1 a month Patreon, you will soon have access to a bunch of fun exclusives that we're currently developing, such as Smash Cuts daily episodes, video trailer reactions with Sean and myself, an exclusive group chat, and a whole lot more. So check that out. You can find links to that in the socials. Sean, it's been fun.
It has been lovely. I love the new ideas, the smash cuts, high energy.
Smash cuts.
I'm just going to do that all the time.
I'm going to try to figure out what, like, this dude reminds me of someone.
Smash cuts. In a movie.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
See you.